as much as that. That's also been proposed. So let's assume for a moment they can't do that. They cannot create all the range of vocational training that is available at OSCI. What I see happening under 414 is a person going to McLaren, perhaps benefiting from the educational program there, but reaching a point where they've exhausted the benefit that's available there. They're not ready to be returned to the community. I see then the option of placement or transfer to OSCI is not only maintaining the protection of the community, but is enhancing the ability of the system to perhaps meet the rehabilitative needs of that individual by offering different programs that would not have been available if the other system were not an option. So if I could continue then and just respond to a few of the positions taken by Professor Burton on behalf of ACLU. She first mentioned indicated that they would prefer that murder alone be eligible for remand. I simply suggest the committee should look at the other crimes. I certainly have handled crimes involving rapists and first-degree robbers who looked for all the world to me as dangerous as some of those that I've handled who have committed murder. Now, I don't believe the rationale that applies to murder does not apply to those other crimes with virtually equal force. Secondly, with respect to whether or not under the matrix many of those 14 and 15 year olds would be eligible to be released prior to their 21st birthday, I would emphasize that while that may be true, it doesn't answer some of the questions about where is the person going to be placed and in what are the programs that are going to be available to that person. Again, I emphasize, for the period of time that they're in, I see 414 as providing needed flexibility in providing varied programming to those individuals. Even if they're going to get out before they're 21, if they have, after spending 2 years at McLaren, if they've exhausted the programs there, the remainder of their time is going to be essentially worthless time or dead time. On the other hand, if there's the option of transfer to the adult system, the remainder of their time may well be productive. So I concede that it may well be true that they will get out before age 21. But on the other hand, I would also point out that if while in the institution they do not respond well and become involved in further incidents, they can change that matrix. In the adult system or with 414, we can then respond to the individual who demonstrates by continued misconduct, for example, in the institution, that they're still dangerous. Without 414, we cannot. We still end up having to release them into the community, irrespective of the fact that they appear to still be dangerous. I would urge the committee to maintain the age 14 lower limit. It is consistent with other statutes which establish that one cannot be held responsible for any conduct occurring before age 14. I personally do not believe that more than one or two 14-year-olds should even be considered for remand per year in Oregon. But when one of those individuals comes along, they are people who should be considered precisely because of the degree of menace, the great degree of menace that they pose. With respect to the burden of proof, I simply would suggest that there is no right to be treated by a particular system. And by a preponderance of the evidence is a fair standard to impose, bearing in mind that what the state is being asked to prove is really the future, whether or not somebody is amenable to rehabilitation in the future. That's a very difficult burden of proof in and of itself. And a preponderance standard provides sufficient balance between the interests of the individual and the interests of the community. I would particularly urge the committee to reject the ACLU's suggestion that there be a requirement of proof of probable cause. Bearing in mind that most of these individuals are going to be held in detention for this kind of crime, And if they're in detention, there will already have been a hearing on probable cause. And if they are subsequently remanded, there will be a hearing on probable cause in the adult system, unless the grand jury indicts. And I would simply suggest to you that the other, we're adding another layer of duplication into the system if we require proof of probable cause in the remand hearing. The remand hearings are dispositional hearings. We're just asking the question, provided the person committed this crime, what's the best system to deal with it? Finally, then, I would urge the committee to pass this legislation in its present form. It is a balanced and flexible and needed adjustment to the existing law. Thank you. I'd be glad to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Keith, can you tell me what case or cases you would point to as the lead appellate decisions as it relates to the court's exercise of the remand decision?
Yes. There's really one which is, interestingly enough, also the Kent decision. I believe that the criteria mentioned are the criteria taken from the United States Supreme Court decision by the name of Kent. But there's I believe it's a 1981 decision, State Ex Rel Juvenile Department versus Kent, wherein the Oregon Court of Appeals laid out about five different categories of criteria that are guiding all of us in our handling of these cases right now. And they include questions, for example, of whether or not the conduct was premeditated, or the degree of premeditation, and particularly so if it's a violent crime. They indicate in there that we are to look to the past record of the individual, and particularly what response they've made to previous programs and services offered. Those are the kinds of criteria that are contained within that Kent decision, and really do provide fairly good guidance even now to the remand decision.
Okay. We'll ask our counsel to try to...
I'd be glad to provide the citation. I can call that to you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a question that Representative Phillips, he had to go testify on another bill that he wanted to ask. He posed a situation where someone is a 14-year-old, has been convicted of murder, is in McLaren. He wants a specific description of the mechanism by which someone may end up in, say, OCI under the bill.
Well, is the question what would happen under the bill?
Yes.
If Senate Bill 414 were law, and this district attorney's office, in looking at that individual, believed that there were potential grounds for a remand, we would bring a remand motion. The judge then, of course, has got to determine, if there's going to be a remand, the judge has got to look at the criteria and determine that under the criteria, this person is a candidate for remand. Assuming that they are remanded, this bill would require that they be initially placed in McLaren or Hillcrest. And I think one of the protections that is a very good protection is that they could not be waived into the adult system until age 16. And then only if the assistant administrator of CSD determines that they're no longer benefiting. It's at the discretion of the assistant administrator. And I would assume that they would exercise that discretion in good faith. Under one other way in which I think this bill is a good bill is that it also requires 16 and 17-year-olds to start at McLaren. The reason I think that's a good provision is, again, I see advantages in making available to corrections people the attributes of both systems. Occasionally you have a person who may be 16, and I tried a remand involving an individual who was 16, repeatedly raped and sodomized a mother of an infant in her own home, threatening to kill her and the child. And this individual had multiple prior referrals to the court, and was examined by two psychologists who found him to be pre-schizophrenic, and both psychologists indicated that he was likely to be very dangerous to the community for many, many years, well beyond his 21st birthday. That individual was not remanded because the judge was very concerned that because he appeared young, though he was tall, 6'2", was fairly thin and appeared young, that that person would be likely to be victimized in the adult system, and the judge was unwilling to start that person in the adult system. But what we're faced with in that case is an individual that we're retaining within a system that nobody thought, none of the professionals in the case believed would rehabilitate him. And we're going to have to release him into the community before his 21st birthday. So again, I emphasize that Senate Bill 414 introduces needed flexibility in the system without, I would suggest, subjecting juveniles to victimization or situations that did not prepare to handle.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hill.
Yes, sir. Keith, when you mentioned that the person who's in Hillcrest or McLaren, and that whether they would be turned over to an adult institution would be determined by the assistant administrator. Is that appealable, that determination? Appealable, and I guess also I'd like to know how, if you feel comfortable with that decision being where it is.
Representative Hill, I don't believe that that's appealable. The point I would make in that regard is that before the discretion is ever handed to the administrator, that person has already had the full blown right to be represented in the remand hearing by counsel. They've had the protection of the criteria in the bill. And after being remanded, they've had the right to a trial by jury. And that's one of the things that I think I would emphasize is that some people have urged that maybe what we need to do is to somehow create the possibility of extending within the juvenile system, but the right to a trial by jury is provided for by this mechanism. But I think there isn't a right of appeal within this bill from that administrator's decision. However, the protections that have preceded that are indeed great.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Keith, I was out of the room for a minute. You may have already spoken to this. You are strongly in support of the bill as it is, but just for the sake of discussion, let's say it didn't happen as it is, how would you feel about the ACLU amendments, particularly the one that would allow just Class A or Class A and B felons to be remanded?
Representative Peterson, that's the first time I had heard that and feel somewhat uncomfortable in responding from lack of knowledge. You know, Multnomah County, I don't think we remand very many individuals under a Class B felony. A Class C felony. I just don't think we do that very often in Multnomah County. What concerns me is whether or not there are different situations in smaller counties who may lack, for one reason or other, the kind of programming that they might need for such an individual, and maybe remanding in the adult system because, indeed, in their community, they're not amenable to whatever programs they have. But I don't believe that would be a serious problem in Multnomah County. I cannot speak for the rest of the state.
I'm sorry, you mean it would be a serious problem not to do that because there's not a significant problem in Multnomah County? I think I missed.
Yeah, I didn't make myself clear. I don't believe we very often remand in Multnomah County a Class C felon or misdemeanor. So I don't think it would have a significant impact on Multnomah County. But I would be concerned that there may be different circumstances in other counties where this might have more impact. And I just don't know whether those impacts would be good or bad. I don't know how to evaluate that.
Okay, so you're really not supporting the concept at this time?
No, but neither am I taking a strong position against it.
Okay, thank you.
I certainly think that the remand option is most important with respect to Class A and B felons.
Further questions, Representative Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith, being from Multnomah County, and the issue's been raised, and I know it's, as Senator Riles mentioned, this is a societal problem, but for, in your experience, what is the percentage of minorities that are remanded and I know being at the office is difficult for you to comment on your particular office, maybe just in general, but what do you think, what is the degree of the discrimination there?
Representative Hill, I don't have statistics, so I, with that caveat.
It's your experience.
Most of the juveniles that I've been involved with who've been remanded have been white. I don't know that I've ever been involved in a remand involving any other minority than black. There's not been a Chicano or Indian or any Oriental cases that I've been involved with. I would suggest that in evaluating whether there might be a problem in this area, one has to bear in mind or look at, we tend to remand, particularly in Multnomah County, remand more often for more violent crimes. And if a particular racial category has a higher percentage of those crimes, they may tend to be remanded. I know, for example, that there was a study done in Multnomah County a couple of years ago that suggested that minorities, particularly blacks, were more frequently committed to the institution. And that's obviously a concern, but one of the things that study didn't address is whether there were, I believe, that judges are more prone to commit to the institution for crimes of violence. And I think there was a consensus, even among attorneys who represented the juveniles there, that there tended to be a higher incidence of violent crimes among blacks, the black youth, and that may have had a role in why there was a higher rate of commitment. But again, my own experience would not suggest a higher rate of remand or a disproportionate rate of remand for any minority. But that's not based upon any analysis or statistics. It's just my own caseload, really.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? If not, thanks very much, Keith.
Thank you.
Chalmers Jones.
I said the clerk, I didn't commit this, and she suggested it was a better thing to do with the strip.
I'll take care of it.
It's more than enough necessary, sure.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chalmers Jones. I'm a member of the Oregon State Board of Parole. And I'm here today representing the board in support of this legislation. The legislation, if enacted, will remove what has been a long-standing inequity in the application of punishment for serious felony offenses. We agree that the crimes listed in the bill are proper and that those youth convicted under this bill should be committed to the Corrections Division, with the division having complete responsibility for making all decisions as to treatment and training. I recognize the bill makes other provisions, and we do not argue strongly with that. The bill in its present form designates the place of custody for those persons under the age of 16. It further states that for such a person, the Children's Services Division shall designate the appropriate juvenile training school or schools for such assignment. Even this phase of decision-making should have the judgment of the Corrections Division considered. We must remember that we are dealing with serious offenders here, and the security involved, in my estimation, surpasses that available at most juvenile facilities. There should also be some consideration for flexibility on the age of commitment to the Corrections Division. If we have a 15-year-old who is 6 feet and weighs in excess of 200 pounds, placement at McLaren is probably improper. He will immediately become a boss con because of size and crime, and will in all probability be a greater problem than if placed at OSCI initially. He certainly is not a candidate for the honor camp. The statute indicates the role that the Board of Parole will play in conducting of a prison term hearing and establishing a release date or a parole consideration date in the case of those who are always also committed as dangerous offenders. The place of custody, if beyond the correctional institution, and that says should pose no significant problem, and should have read may pose a significant problem. Now, what is been forgotten, I think, in the prior testimony, is the fact that if this bill passes and there are remands, how long that individual is going to be locked up is going to be a determination made by the Board of Parole, because the adult program, of course, will operate. And in all cases, even if the individual's history risk score is a perfect 11, in the absence of mitigation, the bottom of the matrix range for murder, and I use murder because aggravated murder automatically tells us what he has, is 10 years. So I think the question then posed to the Corrections Division, or jointly with CSD, is at what point do they have to make the determination to transfer that individual into an adult facility? I see very few, as a matter of fact, I don't see any, who commit murder, and in some cases, the other Class A felonies, as leaving the institution prior to 21. There may be some because of, in those events other than murder, there may be mitigating factors that will reduce the time spent based on the matrix range. But on aggravated murder and murder, I could state unequivocally here now, they're all going to be there past that 21st birthday if the crime is aggravated murder or murder. And that may help to allay some of the fears that I've heard expressed about people getting out before 21. Simply is not going to happen. That would conclude the testimony. It was brief by purpose. Mr. Chairman, I know there are others that had a lot more that they might want to say on 414. If there are any questions, I would be happy to respond to those, though.
Okay. And I just wanted to make sure I understood the correction in the written testimony on that final page. It's that sentence, the place of custody if beyond the correctional institution, you indicated should read may pose significant problems?
Yes.
Okay. Counsel, could you make sure that the copies that have been distributed to members or put in the record are also so corrected? Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I asked a question earlier concerning the situation where juveniles were convicted, then released at age 21, and then committed crimes subsequently, and were back into the system. Do you have any idea of any of those statistics?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, I don't think there are statistics that have been maintained on those, because in a high percentage of the cases, expungement becomes an action and everything goes down the tube. I don't think there are stats. Dean Orton is going to testify, he may have some stats on that from CSD, but I don't think such statistics are available.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Jones, and thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Sure.
Jim Henson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Jim Henson? I'm sorry, is it Huser? Yeah, sorry. Yeah. You didn't have any Muppets, do you? We're asking. It's my understanding that you're going to be doing a overhead projection for us also. Good.
Yes.
If you need to darken any other portions of the room or drop the blinds there, I don't think we have to have it totally blacked out here, but... Jim, I understand you're estimating about 15 minutes for your presentation. Well, you're getting that set up. I just want to inform those who are here to testify. We've got, I believe, four more individuals who have signed up who are still awaiting to testify after Mr. Huser. I hope we can try to conclude by about four, but because we're going to take a break at four. But if we have to go over, we have to go over. But that's just some information. I hope it's helpful to those who are down there. I'm informed by the vice chair that there's to be a Republican caucus apparently at 4, so our break for that purpose and for that reason may exceed the normal 10 or 15 minutes, but we will come back as soon as we can, and I would like to try to have as many members here as possible for the testimony because of the nature of the subject, of course. We'll probably knock off for the day at about 5:30. I'm sure we'll complete 4:14 before that time, but for those who are here on some of the other bills, we hope to have hearing on all the bills. We may not be able to complete work session on all the bills that were listed for work session today. Mr. Huser, thanks again also for your patience and for the work you've put into this presentation.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Huser. I'm a researcher with the Crime Analysis Center, which is a part of the Department of Justice. I have submitted some materials to you that I've attempted to highlight some of the findings of research that may be of assistance to this committee. Some time ago, we took the position that remand would be an important issue about 2 years ago, and we applied for a federal grant on a competitive basis and were awarded money from the U.S. Department of Justice to do this study in Oregon, and I'd like to talk about it, as well as some other research that has a bearing on the work of the committee. The first handout, which I've given you, Exhibit Zero, I called it, is simply a synopsis of the most comprehensive study done in the United States on remand, sometimes called Between Two Worlds, done by the Academy for Contemporary Problems in Ohio State University. I decided to give you the synopsis because it's a very lengthy report. I realize that there's so much reading that can be done for each bill. That should give you a pretty good synopsis. The general findings of the study are that when you look at all remanded juveniles in the United States, excluding blanket remands, some conclusions come about. And one of those is that they're basically property offenders, and a great many of them apparently do not serve incarceration sentences. Anyway, that's for your perusal. Exhibit number one, which I briefly would like to mention, is a survey question. A survey question done in our annual survey of Oregonians, done much like the Harris survey. It gives a good barometer on how people feel. That was the results of a question on would Oregonians be in favor of lowering the age of remand. And as you can notice from the results, the majority of people are in favor. If they qualify that and say only for murder, it changes the percentages slightly, but still a majority of the people polled. That might be of some interest to you. It was done for as a result of the bill being introduced in the last session. The next sets of exhibits, 2, 3, and 4, basically I'm going to try to establish some of the bottom lines of what that set of data tell us. One of the things I would be concerned about looking at a remand bill is whether or not we have a a real growth in violent crime in Oregon. Apparently, if you look at the results, there's been some stability to the crime rates, some significant reductions in certain types of crimes, and particularly among the index crimes that everyone likes to look at, the FBI and others. Part of that reduction, I think, is reflects perhaps different priorities for police work, but also some real decrease in juvenile crime. The juvenile population in Oregon has remained relatively constant for a number of years. Slight changes, but hovering around 700,000 kids. I'm reluctant to go too much further with the suggestion, but I think that in general there's some decreases in serious crime or stability. The most notable exception is assault, and that was mentioned earlier, and the handout number 3 shows that in general there's been some fairly dramatic increases in arrests of juveniles for assault, as well as adults, even more dramatic among adults. Handout 4A, B, and C are basically looking at